It's hard to imagine the 2.5 years where I doubted if I made the right call about starting this place because it took so much longer than what we were told it was going to be. It cost so much more than what we thought it was going to cost. And I had really wise people that care deeply about me, really, really moved by the mission, that tell me, like, are you sure you don't want to just pull out? Like, I love that you had the idea, but maybe it's time to cut your losses short.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. Today's conversation is with April Tam Smith. April's the co-founder of PS Kitchen, a plant-based restaurant in the Theater District in New York City that gives away 100% of its profits and hires people in need of a second chance. By day, April is a managing director at a large New York City investment firm. And somehow between the two, she still finds an amazing amount of time to give and to serve in communities throughout New York City, as well as around the world. She and I sat down at PS Kitchen. We wore masks. And even though it's not open for indoor seating, it's still a little bit loud. We're here at PS Kitchen, which is honestly my absolute favorite restaurant anywhere near the Theater District.
Oh, it's so nice. Thank you.
And every time since you've opened that I come to any kind of show, this is where we dine.
Thank you.
So it is. It's changed my life, but it's changed way more than my life. This place has changed so many lives. You have changed so many lives. So before we even get to PS Kitchen and all the incredible things that happen here. Mm-hmm. Let's just start. Let's go back because I'm so curious about how this all started and how you decided to live such a life of service. Mm. How did it start?
Yeah.
Did you grow up in a family where service was a big value?
I was born in Hong Kong and I was born to parents who are either immigrants from China or their parents were immigrants from China. And my mom especially would often tell me growing up how she was one of three girls that she was fortunate enough to be picked, which is such a sad idea, by my grandma to go to Hong Kong, not because of anything really she did. She just happened to be the naughtiest girl of the three. And my grandma felt bad to leave her with the neighbor as she did with the two older ones, and brought her to Hong Kong with her. My mom has actually started working when she was only 11 years old. Even at that age, she knew that getting to go to Hong Kong, even though she was already working full-time at such a young age, kind of opened up many doors. And I think with that kind of perspective, I just always knew, like, wow, why do I get to stay in school, even as a simple concept as that? And then why do we get to, you know, move over to the U.S. and start this life here. So I always felt like I almost have an obligation, but also a privilege to give back to everyone.
How old were you when you moved from Hong Kong?
Funny enough, also 11. We also didn't come over with very much money, as you can imagine. So we didn't have a whole lot to give in terms of resources, but I just always knew my dad was always the one volunteering to help all the other immigrants. We used to have these 6 a.m. math classes, and he would always be the one that offered to drive the other Chinese kids in our community to school because other parents were working in restaurants and they were working so late. And he said, hey, I can do it. I think at some point I realized my heart was just built to burst for people, for animals. I remember being 9 and I would plead for my mom to take me to the park and feed these kittens, because I literally wanted to cry seeing that they were hungry and they might not necessarily have food to eat. And we would go to China and I would see all these kids that are so sad and they're homeless or all the other situation. But as you're growing up, you kind of feel this pressure to like be stronger or harden your heart or don't be so naive. That's a big message. But I think secretly inside, I always just felt like, oh, I want to cry for these things or I want to do something. I believe I can do something. I think I was always a little bit self-conscious about being too hopeful or too optimistic to the point that it was naive. But as I grew up and mature now as a businesswoman, I feel like I've given myself this freedom. Like, I am passionate. I do have, for some reason, I think, born with an abundance of compassion. And I do cry easily, and I'm not going to be ashamed of that anymore. And I'll just actually use this gift in a way to do something good.
Were you also thinking about a life of what you're doing now? I'm just wondering, like, when all these seeds were planted that you decided, I am really going to just figure out every way on earth I can give.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for making me reflect on as far back as possible. I know that, you know, part of my giving story, the reason why I started way back with my family,
yeah,
definitely has something to do with the fact that we're an immigrant family.
Right.
There was a lot of like, I help you, you help me. Like, even up until this day, my dad is going to hospitals with people as like a 70-something-year-old cancer survivor in the middle of COVID because he couldn't stand the fact that she couldn't understand what the doctor was saying. And he just goes and does that all the time. Where I would be like, maybe you can pause your helping for a little bit. Anyway, so to answer your question, back in college, I already started volunteering. It's always something that I do enjoy doing. But it was, you know, simple things. And that's what I always encourage people. Being a 20-year-old and volunteering in a community center for underprivileged community is just as helpful as starting a vegan restaurant or whatever it is that you're doing. So I was there 19, 20 volunteering, and then I tutor SAT at night. Just simple things to help. But I really think that developed a habit of generosity that you can hang on to as you grow up, as you become more successful or whatever it is that, you know, might be in your journey.
That makes a lot of sense. When did these trips start? You did a lot of Haiti trips.
Yes, I do. It's such a big part of my life. I really, really, really appreciate that I get to do that. My boss calls it my haycation. And I took my first trip to an orphanage in South Africa for kids that are impacted by HIV when I was like 25, 26, This was about 10 years ago. And shortly after, I was just really thinking and learning more about how important it is to help in a sustainable way. Reading books like When Helping Hurts or watching documentaries like Poverty Inc. And obviously a lot of things that your sister's doing,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And just lifting people up in a sustainable way. I wanted to go somewhere that it's close enough that I can commit enough where I'm not just a fun aunt that passes by once a year with gifts. You know, that was wonderful, but I want to really help in a way that is sustainable and I can do it in a partnership. So I started going to Haiti. It was my first of 15 trips.
And what was it like when you first got there?
It was rough. We landed on this like dirt road, like obviously no airport or anything like that. And Mommy Leo, the woman who runs this orphanage, she's been doing it for 50-something years, picked us up in this truck, and we drove for another 2 hours. But I remember the very first night we got there, and she, in the sweet way that she was saying in her Haitian accent, I just love, and she's like, girls, I am so happy you're here. It means a lot to me that you chose to come. And I know there is definitely wisdom and various criticism, rightfully so, sometimes of like, does it make sense for people to go? Like, would you have better off just sending the money, etc. But I think that moment for me and how much it had meant to her you know, I realized there's so much more about just the efficiency of money. Of course, we still end up helping in those practical ways that they would need. But just this human to human, sister to sister moment where she just was like, thank you for tracking all the way from New York, one flight and another flight and another car ride later just to be with us, you know. I think those were the moments where I just knew, hey, this is what I'm going to do. Like, I have my day job. I have my night job.
Oh, that's the other thing. I because I've learned a lot about you this week. I was like, why doesn't anyone ever ask her if she's tired? Because you never, ever stop. I mean, the amount of hours you must put in every single day is astronomical.
It's funny. Well, I really think, you get it, which I love. A, partly I really think it's the plant-based diet. Like, I'm not just like, I don't know.
I mean, you are like, tell us, what's an average day like?
Yeah. I log on to my day job, Bloomberg, all of that, probably 7:15-ish, 7:30. Finish my day, 5-ish, workout.
And it's a hard day. I mean, it's high stress, high intensity.
Exactly. Yeah. Workout, have dinner, which just kind of keeps you sane. And then I usually start, when I start working out, I'm reading my PS kitchen emails and all of that. And then right after I finish that, that's when my night shift starts. And then I finish whenever I finish. And weekends usually does consist of quite a bit of board meetings and board calls or just general brainstorming. But I think what it is that when you're doing something that is not just passion, but that it's life-giving. I think if it's not for the other things that I get to do outside of my day job, I would find my day job maybe more exhausting, which is ironic.
Even being around you, it feels contagious. It does. Like, it's just, it is. It's incredible energy.
I think as I mature more, I'm realizing I don't need to tone it down. My husband used this word buoyancy. That is a buoyancy that I just happened to be born with, that I was, you know, it was a gift that I need to use and share. And I just want to hopefully get other people involved and have them feel and be contagious in this way. Yeah.
So when you first came up with the idea, or when you decided, hey, we're going to do this restaurant in New York City, which is a plant-based restaurant in the theater district that gives every single profit away. So there's zero profits. And the employees are all here. It's all second chance, formerly incarcerated people.
A certain percentage, yeah.
Right. What were people's reactions even in the early days of just discussing it?
Yeah.
Oh, and also on top of that, you didn't have any restaurant experience.
No, but I'm completely, hence the, you can see why sometimes I feel insecure about being naive, but that's okay. So at that point, by the time I was thinking about PS Kitchen, I was already like knee deep into the nonprofit world. I was going to Haiti quite a bit. It was a big part of my life. And every time I come back from Haiti, I would write an email to like my whole trading floor. I would talk to friends about it. And I would say like, help me build a well, help me build a school, you know, help me fund X, Y, and Z. And I myself was really stretching myself to write bigger and bigger checks. And it was just something that I really felt clear about. And it was really genuinely, it's not a have to. It's not because I feel guilty about anything or that I should. I really felt like it's really a get to. But as I was doing that more, I knew that there is a sustainability aspect that I wanted to crack. And there are two main things that I was trying to solve for. One is the financial gifts for these organizations I'm really passionate about. I would keep donating myself. I would keep writing these emails. But I was loving the idea of if there is a business that just spit out profit, that's easy for people to go to, right? Because as you can imagine, people always ask like, hey, how do I help? Well, if I can't go to Haiti or if I can't do this, and I don't want to just write a check, you know? You can volunteer with me here, but you can also just come and eat. So that's one fun way that I wanted to invite a lot of people into this vision. Second important code which is not really, you know, people catch the idea of all the profits, you know, the fact that my co-founder and I don't keep anything. But the second piece is actually just as important, if not more important, which is the employment piece.
Yes.
You know, and I think the second sustainability that I was really trying to crack was, at this point, I was already volunteering for DeFi Ventures as a mentor.
Will you say what DeFi Ventures is?
Yes. So at this point, I already was volunteering for DeFi Ventures, which is an organization that helps men and women who are coming home from prison start small businesses so that they can employ themselves or at least have that kind of training to get a job.
Was the plan from day one what it became, plant-based and the same with the employment?
Yes, such a good question. So going back, I wanted to start a business that would sustainably fund these organizations and then employ people who need a second chance. So I was seeing as a mentor for DeFi Ventures who help people who are coming home from prison and having such a hard time getting jobs to start their own small businesses or volunteering at a safe home for women who are survivors of trafficking. I just kept seeing the same thing is that people just keep saying, like, I just want a job. You know, I want to be able to provide for myself. And I can work so hard as a volunteer with their resume, with their mock interviews and all of that. If someone's not willing to look past their past, then it almost felt like we couldn't really help them, you know? It felt this discouragement of like, we couldn't get to that last point.
Right, they still have to get hired.
Exactly. And I think since I opened PS, like to me, that's been like the thing that's like, gosh, that was worth the pain. And I started going down that rabbit hole was because the same day I met Darian, I went to volunteer at Walk Hill Prison.
Where's Walk Hill Prison?
It's like about 2 hours upstate.
Okay.
And when I went in, I didn't realize that this guy, Cerrone, who I personally hired when I met him at a Christmas party for DeFi, who came home just 3 weeks prior, came from that prison. And they were like, he is like the Steph Curry in that prison. Like everyone loved him. Everyone admired him. They think he is such, you know, such a good guy character. And when the board chair announced to everybody, including me hearing this for the first time, like, this is the young lady who started PS and hired Cerrone, and now he works in Times Square. I had a few coworkers with me, and just to watch that moment, imagine with me, you know, my super senior woman MD with my analyst next to two guys that are in prison, all standing up and giving us a standing ovation. And just really, this warden was like almost in tears, and she came up to me and held my hand and was just like, I just want to tell you that I love you. I know I don't really know you yet, but you don't see the impact that I get to see of these guys having the hope that they have because they now know Cerrone works in Times Square. As we're talking, having a conversation like this, and you're seeing PS Kitchen, often we don't actually talk about, it's hard to imagine the 2.5 years where I doubted if I made the right call.
About
starting this place because it took so much longer than what we were told it was going to be. It cost so much more than what we thought it was going to cost. And I had really wise people that care deeply about me, really, really moved by the mission that tell me like, are you sure you don't want to just pull out? Like, I love that you had the idea, but maybe it's time to cut your losses short. And I appreciated all of that. And I definitely don't feel like, you know, they were trying to like not be supportive of anything, but just practicality. It was burning cash, you know?
Right.
And us, literally, I was the only one that was even 30 years old when we signed this 15-year lease. Everyone else was in their 20s. So it was just a bunch of idealistic kids.
How long was it from idea to the doors opening?
Yeah. You would be embarrassed for me. So we had the idea April 10th of 2014. Started looking at spaces, like July, all that. And then October, so this is also crazy. I got married in October 2014. And literally 3 months later, we signed this 15-year lease. So, like, welcome to marrying someone crazy. But he knew that going in.
But he's a little, I want to talk about him too, because he's a little crazy himself.
Yes. Well, if you had to buy into all this, you kind of have to be. But so, yeah. And then my really sweet, amazing business partner, and all of us were in our 20s. It was really scary to do this 15-year lease. For Times Square.
In Manhattan, right.
In Times Square. But, you know, again, if I really think that, which I do, and I try to remind myself all the time, that if where I was born was out of my control, the fact that, you know, I went to a good school for college was out of my control, just the fact that my mom even went to Hong Kong, it's out of her control, like, then really, I think every dollar that I have, it's not mine. Like, I really, really see it. I'm just a steward of God's money. So if that's the case, at the end of the day, if I really messed it up, I think I would not regret trying my best to do something that I know deep inside, like full clear conscience, I was just trying to help people. And that's kind of just what I was able to hang on to. But that doesn't make the 2.5 years, you know, that much easier. We end up signing the lease February 2015, but we open August 4th of 2017.
But you also renovated.
We renovated the heck out of this place. Like, when it's not always easy just because you try to do something good, for sure.
How many people work here?
We had 67 people. Yeah, of course, that's changed now.
Well, with COVID, sure.
Yeah, but we had 67 people and
that's a lot of lives.
Yeah, and that's so important to me. Not everyone comes from, because we need, I can't train them, we need the professionals.
Well, because I would imagine most people haven't worked in restaurants before.
Exactly. And that's the beauty of, you know, people often ask me, why a restaurant? And this is definitely not to say starting a restaurant is easy at all. I give so much credit to my incredible staff. But I was hoping that would be something that maybe someone who has no experience at least has a few entry position where I can do that. Come start tomorrow. Right. Are you ready?
What about the plant-based part of it? How did that come about?
Yeah. So that's kind of funny. So I decided, okay, I'm going to start a business that gave away all the profit. Let's go. What business? I had no idea. I just felt strongly to start something that's sustainable, that would provide money and then jobs. You know, I was simply thinking, restaurants bring people together. I have zero restaurant experience, nor do I know anybody that did, except for one friend who was really more of an acquaintance, to be honest. Actually, he was such an acquaintance that I had to guess his email and send 3 versions and hope one of them was going to hit, and it did. And I pitched him the idea, and of course he was like, oh my gosh, you're crazy. He spent the first 40 minutes or so talking me out of it. And then when he realized it was not happening, he said, okay, I would help you. He came on as a consultant. And he was like, but under one circumstance, it has to be vegan. And awesome. I was totally like, wait, what? Okay.
Were you vegan at the time?
Not at all.
Okay.
I had never really thought about it. But as I dug a bit deeper, I read, of course, all the books, I watched all the documentaries. And I remember specifically watching Forks Over Knives for the first time on a flight to Seattle from New York. And when I finished it, I was so shocked that I rewound it and watched it all the way on the same flight. I was like, this is crazy stuff. And by the time I landed, I was vegan.
Wow.
So honestly, no looking back. Loved it, like literally love it. And I just am so grateful that I can just live all of my compassion out.
Yeah.
It's okay that I feel bad, that I know some people think it's crazy to feel bad for animals that are meant for food, but I do, and I want to do something about it.
And you are.
Yeah, and the environment, like I think for anybody who care about justice, which a lot of people that come are, once they see how much climate change is truly a justice issue, then I think they will also want to do something about it. You know, having studied environmental engineering, having seen some of the impact of climate change, right? Like, it's all in the places that I care about, that I serve in, right? Like, and they're right. The countries that contribute the least.
That's who's going to be hit the hardest, is already hit the hardest, and it's just going to get exponentially worse.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, the drought, like, starvation and everything that was happening to Haiti, like,
yes.
And yeah, I know for sure not everyone can be vegan. Like, sometimes people would ask me, well, you know, if you are a child in, let's say, Uganda, and like, there's only a chicken farm, and you know, what can you do, etc. But I would say, just like, not everyone gets to.
Well, if you're a child in certain neighborhoods in the USA,
yes.
You can't be vegan. Like,
yes, totally.
Which is really disheartening and just disturbing. But I mean, there's a lot of neighborhoods where people can't afford to eat outside of their world that might have a liquor store and, some really crappy fast food.
Totally. But in the same way that not everyone can afford to donate, certain percentage of their money, not everyone can afford to volunteer their time because they're working so much. If you can, this is your generosity to the world. Like, this is your generosity to all the people cannot, right? And I think that's kind of our duty and our privilege of, like, what is the max generosity that you can live out with your food choices, with your time, with your money choices.
Yeah.
It's all part of the cycle for sure.
Okay, so speaking of generosity, will you tell the story of meeting Graham? I heard some of it, I was like, okay, if two people were ever made for each other, this is one of those.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So at that point, I was already going to Haiti a lot. I actually was living in a two-bedroom apartment with my roommate, but I had invited a single mom who originally was from Haiti and her two-year-old to live with me in my bedroom. So I was already doing this kind of funky, living situation. I was like, it's okay. You guys are in between apartments. Just stay with me. Live with me. It ended up being like definitely longer than we had expected. And because I was also trying to learn Creole because I was bringing a kid from Haiti to have surgery in Boston. It was like a longer story. But so as this was happening, I met this guy, Graham, at a community group from my church. And he didn't say anything the whole night. He was super quiet until I brought up this thing about generosity and this organization, Generous Giving. And he's like, wait, what? What is this? He later on said he wanted to get coffee, which I kind of thought was more professionally related because, funnily enough, a colleague of his asked me for coffee literally the week prior, completely professional. And I was like, okay, great. He probably just wanted to have a similar talk. And turns out, he had other ideas, but also that he was living in a way that was just as crazy. He had come home from Uganda a few months before he started working at Credit Suisse. And he just had this idea of, what if I try to live off of 10% of my income and give away the rest of it? And because he was just coming from Uganda, he also thought, to start, I can start by trying to pay the same rent I paid in Uganda in New York City, and which is what get you a bunk bed and sharing a room with two other grown men.
So between you guys both had two people sharing your bedroom.
And I remember going on this coffee, and he was just so simply, kind of in passing, bringing this up. He wasn't even like, guess what I'm doing.
Right.
It came up because he was saying, like, he met this homeless guy, Jeff, outside of Credit Suisse, and he just really befriended him. And this really amazing story of, being seen, right? What Graham was trying to do that week with his income was, Jeff sits outside of CS, super sweet guy, he's homeless, and he always had his neck like all the way down and he can't look up because of so many years of sleeping, just sitting up.
Right.
And Graham thought, maybe if I give him the cash to try to rent a room for 2 weeks and sleep on a bed, he can try to fix his neck. And at this point, they've really built a friendship. And it was really sweet. Jeff saw it, got really touched, and then gave everything back to him. And he said, Graham, your friendship has meant so much to me that I don't even want your money. I just want you to keep coming every day and spend the 20 minutes that you do with me.
And so he wasn't at all thrown by the fact that you were, I mean, you were doing almost the same thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, no. And he was worried, which was funny, that I was going to be turned off by the fact that he barely has any new clothes and he lives in a bunk bed.
a lot of 20-something-year-old women would.
Exactly. Work on Wall Street, and he was just like, and little did he know, when I talk about him early on to head of sales or senior people that, you know, has asked me about things like that, caring like a little sister. I was like, no, he is the real deal. He lives in a bunk bed. So that's what he is known for, the bunk bed guy.
And so the two of you, it's just expanded everything that you do since you...
Yeah. And you know, we're learning, you know, that was quite a way to start a new marriage.
Yeah.
Signing the 15 years a few months after. And of course, the first 2.5 years, we had to build PS Kitchen. And you can imagine the stress, that,
it's a lot
stress,
of stress
that comes from it. So it's helpful that we always have stories like that to look back on. Was we always knew that that's why we want to build a life together. That's what gets us out of bed. That's what gets us excited. And we also, funnily enough, have also had roommates almost our entire time of being married too, which is a bit unusual for a lot of bankers. But, you know, that's another way for us. Not two people in our room anymore, roommate.
No, but in your apartment.
In our apartment. And, you know, we've had people who couldn't pay at all, you know, for whatever reason, live with us for free. Then we did, like, almost just like a gesture kind of rent to full rent, but they donate to causes we believe in. So we've tried out all different ways, but just another way for us to try to be generous, be creative with how we can be generous. Although the last few months we have finally, for the first time, we said we should really try to live on our own.
Wow.
That's so big. That was stuff. A big move for us.
Well, and how's it been?
It was perfect timing because COVID. Then it's been COVID.
Right.
So it was kind of crazy.
And up until COVID, this is another thing that is incredible, is that this restaurant, which you knew nothing about restaurants, every time I'm here, not during COVID, obviously, you can't get in. It's like, it's an enormous success.
Thank you.
Everyone I know like raves about it.
Thank you. So kind.
So congratulations for that.
Thank you.
I mean, you must have expected it on some level or you wouldn't have done it in New York, because you can't really survive if your restaurant isn't a success in New York. But were you a little surprised at how the reception has been?
I was, to be honest. Like, you would say, you would assume that I wouldn't be surprised, but don't forget the childlike hopefulness part of
right.
me.
Right.
I think that I just really believed in people's generosity too. I think what's really unique about our restaurant is that our customers are like our advocates. I'm so grateful for that. And that, I guess, by nature makes sense, because you're usually here because you're plant-based and you want to tell people about it. Or you're passionate about criminal justice reform or trafficking or building schools in Congo. But often...
And it's all happening right here at PS Kitchen. It's justice and compassion.
Yes.
And that's what this place is.
It's just that. Thank you. I think it's just that simple. Like, I love that answer. It's all part of the justice and compassion answer and story. There's no way we couldn't be vegan, you know? And in the same way, and why... There's no way we couldn't try to use employment to lift people up, you know, and to love on them and to create a community. That's been really cool.
And what's
too.
That been like too?
Oh gosh, I can't even. Oh, it's just so, so sweet. Like COVID, if I just like tell you what happened from March to now, that also was already like, it so had been worth the tears that might have happened in those 2.5 years. You know, from the time we had to close and started furloughing people. And we decided that even though we have lost business pretty significantly, as you can imagine, by the time we closed, that we definitely want to pay people, you know, for that, just that paycheck. and then for more as people have needs. So we send out a text, which is anybody who needs help, please don't be shy. Reach out. We will Venmo you. We'll do whatever. As these funding were coming in, and we sent out this text, whoever needs money, like, let us know. And we started, like, kind of individually checking on in with some people. And we actually got back more responses than you could ever imagine. Like, literally saying, like, oh, I'm good. Like, I just got my unemployment. Like, send it to so-and-so. I'm good. Have you checked in with this person? And that's just one way of community that we've gotten to see and experience. And yeah, the staff is so much more than staff.
Oh, what an incredible place. Like I said earlier in this, it is contagious. You're like, you're good energy. Everything that you do.
So you get so much of what I'm trying to do.
I totally get it. And I love it. So thank you, April.
Oh, thank you.
To learn more about April and PS Kitchen, or to eat at PS Kitchen, go to their website. It's ps-kitchen.com. We will have links to everything on our website, speciesunite.com. If you have a minute and could do us a favor, please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. And if you'd like to support the podcast, we're on Patreon. It's patreon.com/speciesunite. I would like to thank everybody at Species Unite, including Gary Knutson, Natalie Martin, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful day.